Hello and welcome to the Cigar Cast, your weekly one-stop shop for all things cigar-related, including industry news, reviews, and everything in between. We're recording live from Crown Cigars and Nails here in beautiful Brentwood, Tennessee. I'm one of your hosts, Trey Demon. I'm joined, as I am every week, by Mr. Shane Reeves.
You know, you're going to have to slow that down. You've got to where you pick up speed every week. And as you get more nervous, if you ever stumble, then you really throw it into overdrive.
Well, so the thing with that this week is the fact that my energy is about a -6 on a scale of 1 to 100. So,
hey Shane, I feel terrible. Let's do a podcast. Sure.
Basically, was that so? My attempt in speeding it up was to try and put some life into it. So
it failed.
It would have been fine if you hadn't called attention to it.
It sounded like you were a speed reader reading a teleprompter.
I'm going to start advertising for Micro Machines next.
That's right. Now, that guy, he had a great career.
He did.
To be a one-trick pony, what was his name?
I'll look it up on the break.
Yeah, I have no idea. But to be such a one-trick pony, that guy had made the most out of it. I admire the fact that he only had one skill, but he did it well. Speaking of one skill and doing it well, my one skill is smoking a cigar.
John Machida.
Machida, yep. And all, but he's, you know, he had a role in Transformers. He was in the movies. He's been in a bunch of stuff.
He actually had a Guinness record for being the fastest talker in the world.
Well, and he was clear. He enunciated.
You could understand him, yeah.
You know, you see people that talk fast, but it's not really... You know, the reason for, I was watching something the other day, and they were talking about the reason why auctioneers have that patter in between is because thought is the enemy of bidding. So they keep the patter going so that you don't think too much about what you're bidding on.
Right. Instead, you get to sit there and go, huh, that guy talks funny.
Yeah. So impressed. So anyway, all right. What are you smoking tonight, Trey?
Well, I got so jealous of the last couple of weeks. You know, when we first started the quarantine podcast and kind of moved from the shop to our respective porches and then your back porch, you smoked probably 3 Africas on the show over the course of about 4 weeks. And I got so jealous that I decided, you know what? I'm not going to let you have all the fun. I'm smoking an Africa this week.
You know, it's kind of bad. This really talks because I've got to buy another box of Africas. I'm out. And I was thinking to myself, should I buy Africas or should I buy Underground Shades? Now, Underground Shade has been the standard bearer in my life for a long time for that morning cigar.
Uh-huh.
But for nearly the same money, I can have an Africa. So it's going to be kind of hard for me to
But that kind of goes to your whole, if you smoked a Padron every day, it wouldn't be a Padron.
But this will be my 4th box of Africas, and it's still just as good as the first time I smoked one.
I understand that, but you do run the risk of rubbing the bloom off the rose a little bit.
I do have that. So,
what are you smoking?
I'm going to smoke something that I've never smoked before. This is the La Aurora Preferidos Hordage. How do you pronounce that? Hordage?
Hordage.
Hordage.
Hordage. The H is silent.
Oh, Hordage. 2017. So this is, they've been sitting in the humidor for a while around here. And I was in there and I said, you know, I've never smoked one before. I'm in the mood to smoke something new on the podcast today. So what the heck? I'll choke it down and I'll go ahead and smoke it. And so I got it. It's an Ecuadorian wrapper.
Yeah, but do you ever really have to choke down anything from La Aurora?
Oh, no. Well, by choking it down, I meant the impact upon my wallet.
Fair enough.
Because it
is about 17?
No, 20. It's Padron money.
Okay.
So La Aurora, who we talk up all the time and who has done a knockout job this year, I'm now putting to the ultimate test.
All right.
Now they've got to live up to Padron money. This cigar, if it does not live up to Padron money, sorry, fellas. You know, all you've done has been for naught.
Except that you've got a cigar in the Africa that is as good for half the price. So across the line, it balances out.
It's not as good as a Padron.
It's real dang close.
I mean, it's as good as a Padron 9000 series, but then you're getting into comparably priced cigars. But, I mean, even as good as the Africa is, you're not going to put up against a Padron 50th anniversary anybody say, yeah, this is the better cigar.
No, I understand that. But
so there is something to be said for that. But I am, that being said, It's Ecuadorian wrapper, Ecuadorian binder. Filler is Dominican, Nicaraguan, and Colombian. So there's a lot going on in there.
Yeah.
I'm interested to fire this up. The wrapper is a good color. The wrapper's that rich bronze type hue to it. You really know this came off a leaf.
Yeah.
You know, this was a leaf at one time and all. So it doesn't, you don't lose that. But excited to light it up and try it.
All right. So you want to get straight into the show?
No, I figured we'd talk weather, maybe philosophy, see if we can find, you know.
I was giving you an opportunity to light your cigar.
Well, then why didn't you just step right into the show and then I would have lit it of my own accord. Okay, everybody kill the mics for 5 minutes so Shane can light his cigar.
It's going to be one of those weeks, folks. Buckle up. So, from Bloomberg this week, there has been an announcement of who's responsible for buying Imperial Brands' premium cigar business. So we talked about this a couple of months ago when it first got announced, I want to say. And, you know, basically this is a cigar portfolio that includes the likes of Romeo and Julieta, Monte Cristo. And at the time, they did not mention who the buyer was going to be. Well, it turns out that the CEO of Allied Cigar is one Hong Kong businessman tied to a $1 billion gambling ring, but a legal one.
A legal gambling ring.
I really don't understand why this article was written so pointedly.
See, there's a couple of ways to come at this. I feel like, because I do believe the worst in Bloomberg, that they just said, aha, got you. The evil cigar being bought by the evil gambling magnet.
Probably.
I feel like that was their entire motivation. I would like to look on the bright side and find a positive spin on this, but I don't got it.
Yeah. You know, it is, and it, what's funny, too, is that it's not even like they're running a bunch of back alley casinos or even casinos. This is a company that extends credit to casino high rollers. If anything, I think this is perfectly on brand.
Yeah, these are the people that are smoking the cigars.
Yeah, especially in the Asian markets where there is a huge divide. You know, we talk about how easy it is to walk into a cigar shop in the U.S. and you've got, you know, broke college students sitting next to CEO of, you know, Fortune 100 business, sitting next to self-employed, sitting next to a small business owner. In the Asian markets, specifically China, you don't have that. You either have money or you don't.
Right.
So they are catering to a specific clientele here. I think it's completely on brand. I don't see the gotcha in this article that they were clearly going for.
And Bloomberg didn't even get it right. Asian gambling exec linked to 1 billion Cuban cigar deal. This is an American cigar. This is not Cuban cigar. Because some of the names have Cuban connotation. Is that what they're trying to do?
I think this is the Cuban brands. I think it was both the North American and the Cuban lines under the same name.
Okay, so then they are justified in using the term Cuban. But
I think this is also probably written by somebody who knows jack all about cigars, and they figured Cuban was a word that had pizzazz and would bring people in.
That cigars just mean Cuban.
Yeah,
and I don't know. This seems to me like Bloom, and you know we say it all the time. Hey, anytime an outside news source that's not aficionado, Half Wheel, or somebody like that gets in on the cigar business, it's good.
Which is why we speak so highly of Rob Report, because they actually do it right.
Right. When they do an article, they actually make it mean something. Yeah. This, to me, means nothing. And like I said, I had to bring it up. And let's talk about something that does mean something. It's something a little more grassroots.
All right.
From the Cision PR Newswire. C-I-S-I-O-N? Is that Vision of a C? Cision?
Probably Cision.
Okay, there's going to be a lot of C's here. So Cision says Cajun cigars are closing the gap between cigar manufacturers. Did we run out of C's? Does every word
closing
in
the chasm.
Closing the chasm. Does every word have to start with a C? Cajun
Cigars. I'm a big fan of alliteration, so I say they pulled it off.
Okay. Well, Cajun Cigars are closing the gap between cigar manufacturers and consumers through new and innovative distribution channels. I'll break this down.
I wonder if most people out there don't realize that a lot of times when you go into a grocery store, a liquor store, a country club, that when you see a humidor on the wall, those people are not going out and setting up accounts with manufacturers. They're not buying those cigars. They usually go through a third-party distributor.
Right, the wholesaler, if you will.
Distributor. It would be manufacturer, wholesaler, distributor, retailer.
Okay.
In this case.
And so the Cajun Cigar Czar is Dustin Prudhomme. And I recognize that name from somewhere.
I did too.
I don't know where, but for some reason I recognize that name as something that we've seen in previous cigar articles. But here's what he does. Say you got a country club. Say you want to be able to offer good cigars to your customers, and you want to be able to offer them at a price commensurate to what they could get in the shop. Give Dustin a call. He wheels a humidor in there on a dolly, sets it down, stocks it for you. He's stocking thousands of these humidors, so he's getting great rates from the dealers. And then he cuts you a little slice of the pie. But I bet the slice of the pie is just barely enough to cover the real estate that this takes up in the shop.
Well, it's entirely possible. But the thing is, when someone comes in to buy cigars, they're going to buy something else. And if they're buying something else and they happen to pick up a cigar, well, that's fine, too. It's all about, you know, there's a balance in business between providing enough services and products that your consumer wants in order to have happy customers that come back, balanced with how much it costs to provide those and how much real estate it takes up and that sort of thing. The thing that makes this so brilliant in my mind is, you know, I'm a huge nerd and I love all things technology, is that he's actually got these set up in such a way that they're self-monitoring.
Right.
So the cabinet that he uses is taking its own inventory in real time so that it can alert him and say, hey, you're getting low on CAO Brasilias at this one package store in Biloxi. And so he goes, okay, and he ships them out. And he's keeping all of these, you know, the worst thing you can have happen to a walk-in humidor is low stock.
Right.
That is death when you're talking about a single cabinet humidor like this. You know, if you're only offering 15 facings to begin with and you've got 3 to 5 that are empty, now you're operating at such a huge, off your back, off, good Lord, I can't talk today. you're behind the eight ball already.
And so, you know,
did that all, folks?
I could have helped you out, but I just thought I'd sit here and let you suffer.
The grin just kept getting bigger and bigger across your face. So the fact that he is managing all of these humidors across the country at once remotely, I would say is going to be what sets him apart and makes this such a lucrative endeavor for him.
Well, so his biggest enemy is going to be the biggest enemy of cigar stores ever, where shrinkage. Mm-hmm. You know, because how much of a vested interest does the owner have to keeping these cigars from getting stolen?
I'd say that probably depends on the commission structure.
Probably, and it probably also depends on, you know, I would say he gives them the humidor, and then they buy the cigars, and then they have their own markup on the cigars.
That's what I'm guessing.
And that would you'd have to do it that way, because then he could just call and say, hey, the humidor says you're almost out of Rocky 15s. Would you like another box?
Or do you want to switch it out for this other thing that you guys aren't carrying that's selling well? You know, whatever he wants to do. Yeah, no, I'm sure the individual retail store has some skin in the game, which is what allows them to, you know, to monitor shrinkage and things like that and to keep it from being too one-sided.
So is this good for the cigar industry or not?
I think it is. Any time we expand the availability of cigars, we take the mystique and the stigma away from it.
Yeah, but by definition, these cigars and these humidors are going to be pretty general, pretty pedestrian. You're not going to do, not general cigars, they're going to be cigars of a general nature.
I'm looking at one of these pictures, and it's a lot of general cigars.
Yeah, it actually is general cigars, but it's going to be cigars of a more pedestrian nature, of a less, you know.
But that's up to the consumer. You know, if they, if they are a pedestrian consumer, then they're going to appreciate that the brands that they recognize and like are in this. If they are not, then odds are they're going to be familiar enough with something to at least be able to get by, or they would have brought their own if they were going to be the type of person to bitch about the selection wherever they happen to be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate here because I don't know, you know, I don't believe this actually takes any business away from brick and mortars, because if there's, you know, they don't put them in, they're not going to put them in the liquor store up the road from here.
Right.
And all, it's just not, it's not practical. So,
but I'm looking at this. Got a couple of acids, which is to be expected. But I'm seeing some AJ Fernandez, some Rocky, Cohiba. Why did I say that that way? CAO Brasilia America and Colombia.
Yeah, there's some Macanudas in there, and there's some.
And then there's some like kind of no namey kind of stuff.
Sure.
It even looks like a.
Hey, there's the Perdomo 4-pack.
Yeah. So really interesting. I want to keep an eye on this guy and kind of see how this keeps going. I think this could actually be really beneficial to the cigar industry as a whole. Not in a way that we'll see, that we as a consumer will see the benefit of it, but it'll just be nice to keep an eye on.
Well, so I'm sitting here smoking the Ordage. I'm not impressed at all. I mean, it's... To be the price it is, you would expect it to be of a significant quality, and I'm just not catching anything out of this.
Explain that a little bit more for me. In what way is it just the flavor not what you want, or is there actually a quality issue?
Well, no, the quality's fine. I mean, it's smoking just fine. It lit up just fine, and all, I tapped it too soon, but that's the only problem. But I'm not getting any depth. I'm not getting any complexities. All I'm getting out of it is a general overall sourness.
Hmm.
There's kind of the overwhelming flavor of it is sour. And I'm not talking sour as in, ooh, yuck, sour. It's just sour as a flavor.
Right.
And I'll just pretty much a one-note cord. I'm hoping that it gets better as I smoke it down some more. But I'm just, completely unimpressed.
Hmm.
Which is kind of odd. I thought I was expecting better.
Yeah, I would have expected that for you as well.
So far, they're not coming nowhere close to Padron money. Not even getting there. All right, so Cigar Journal. Let's talk about this real quick.
All right.
Cigars 101, a fundamental education. Tobacconist University launches Cigars 101. Okay. Princeton, New Jersey-based Tobacconist University. Why? What's the benefit of this? What possible reason? I'm as big a cigar nerd as anybody in the world.
No, you're not.
And what possible reason?
Because if you were, you could not wait to walk into a cigar shop and go, well, actually, guys, the credentials behind my name would dictate that I should know how to... It's for those people.
No, I'm not a narcissist. There's a difference in a narcissist and a nerd.
No, but some... But we all know those people that they go out, you know, they start a new job or they just graduate with their bachelor's, and they immediately start looking at what related initials they can put up at the end of their name just to give themselves more credibility, to give more, like.
So is it a self-confidence issue? Do they need to have those?
It's also the kind of, would you rather be, what is it you always say?
Would you rather be right or would you rather be successful?
Yeah. Some people would rather be right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a world of them. That's why I end up asking them that question.
And this is for the people that they want to get into an argument over which cigar is better or which pairs better with what or which leaves to and then they've got the ultimate trump card of, well, I know more than you. So I'm obviously right.
To whip out their diploma that says, I am a master tobacconist.
Yeah. Now, I'm judging this very harshly, much more harshly than I actually believe. I think this is... No. I'm
lying to everyone out there. I really like...
No. So I haven't really... I mean, I'm painting a picture of the kind of person that would go through this program. But that's not to say that I necessarily agree that that's the only people it's for. I like the idea of this. I like the fact that there is a... certain amount of validity to the hobby that comes with something like this. And I also like the fact that there's a, you know, a lot of shops will bring in a rep or will bring in a manufacturer representative, and they'll do a tasting session or a question and answer over how cigars are cultivated, how, you know, how it's fermented, how it's made, all of this, you know, blending. Where, you know, but to have a resource, especially right now when we're all sitting at home on our butts with nothing to do, of
who are these people? I
just let me
have. Who are the people that have nothing to? You know what I've done with this time? I've got all of my chores caught up. I've done stuff on the deck. I've done things on the house. I've cleaned up. My yard looks better than it's ever looked before. I worked out a treaty. We put up a big table in the front yard, and me and the neighbors on either side of me signed a treaty as to how often we're going to mow the freaking yard. I had a neighbor, this jerk. Sorry, I'm getting off cigars, but I've got, don't be this guy. Everybody, don't be this guy. I would mow my yard, and exactly 4 days later, he would mow his, so that mine looked like garbage, so that it was not as short as his, but it was too short to mow. But because this jerk, and after like the eighth time he did it, and my neighbor on the other side of me, we've had this great mowing relationship ever since I moved in. Hey, you going to mow today? No, I think we can get another week out of it. I do too. You know, and he and I, we negotiate it where we can both look the same and have a good uniformity, because that's how they judge. When they come into your neighborhood to tell you if your yard needs mowed or not, they look at your neighbor's yard. So if you and your neighbor will get together, you can actually negotiate the minimum amount of mowings per year needed to keep your yard up.
Because compared to this guy, you look in compliance.
Right, right. Because if all three of the houses in a row, if the house on either side of me mows on the same schedule as I do, I can stretch an extra week out of that mowing pretty regularly. So I organized a summit. We all come together. We explained to this gentleman the problem with him mowing exactly 4 days, because then that meant that I had to mow earlier, which meant that my neighbor beside me had to mow earlier, that he was putting a lot of unnecessary burden on our life, and that we were going to kill him and bury him in his backyard if he didn't quit doing that. That there, from now on, there's going to be a designated mowing day. And so I've been using this time to better mankind and better my life. Every time I hear somebody use that phrase, well, while we're sitting around doing nothing, who has time to do nothing? What is wrong with you people?
So anyway, the...
I'm just saying...
You realize unemployment's at an all-time high, right?
Okay, so unemployment should motivate you. So employment is the carrot. Unemployment is the stick. If you want them to quit hitting you with the stick, then get back to the point where you're at the carrot. Figure out how to get back to the carrot part of this analogy.
We don't have enough time on this podcast
sure
for me to
do.
Argue
we got
that
all
point.
Day.
Anyway, so I like the idea that a program like this exists, because this is a hobby that is benefited by a high level of knowledge about the entire process. And so it's nice to know that there's a resource out there, and it's sort of accredited, if you will, because of who puts it on, that you know you're getting accurate information. You know, I can sit around on YouTube all I want and learn about cigars, but when half of the people disagree, you never know if you're getting good information. This way, at least, you know you're getting good information. This
okay, is it useful information? I mean, how much of the knowledge you have about cigars is useful? Because at the end of the day, there are people who, you know, heaven help them, like Gurkhas. And there's no amount of knowledge from Cigar 101 going to convince them that their palate is wrong.
Well, no, but it's not about, it's not necessarily about whether or not your palate is right or wrong. It's helping understand your palate. You know, your palate is always going to be individualized. If everybody had the same palate, there would only be one stick in that humidor. So it's not about right or wrong. It's about understanding the characteristics that make up that and how different processes affect those flavors in the leaves throughout. And I'm the kind of person that I really like having that extra information. Knowledge is power.
How much of my life are they wanting to burn with this thing? So the cost is $75, and $75 really is not a big deal. It's time.
4 hours. Four hours.
So 4 hours. So they're going to burn 4 hours of my life at this thing for 75. Okay, I could almost make that work. Sorry. Yeah. I'm a little grouchy about the whole teaching thing because I got to spend a considerable hunk of next week on continuing education for real estate.
Yeah, I've got that coming up for my insurance license as well. So
yeah, which is terribly useless.
Well, but anyway, I do want to point out we are about ready to go to a break, but this is the same company that puts on the certified consumer tobacconist degree, which is something that a lot of your tobacconists, your retail shops, will at least have a member on staff who holds this. And it's just a way of saying we have someone on staff who can really...
Who spent 4 hours in front of a computer?
Well, that's a different program.
Oh, okay. That's 8 hours in front of a computer.
I don't have the energy for this today, Shane.
Come on, Trey. I want to keep poking you till something happens.
Yeah, but I left my bail money in my other pants. All right. So let's step away. Let's talk about a cigar under eight. And when we come back, we'll talk about traveling as if any of us will ever get to do that again. Trey here with this week's Cigar Under Eight. Want to talk about the Romeo y Julieta Medianoche. You like the way I did that?
You went all Italian for a little bit.
I did. So this is a relatively new release compared to a lot of the underrates that we talk about. It's a San Andreas Maduro wrapper over Dominican long filler. Really spicy, kind of medium full flavored. Not necessarily what you would expect from a Romeo.
Pretty good cigar. I mean, these are good cigars, and these are good utilitarian workhorse type cigars. And I don't know that I could smoke one every day, but I could smoke one once a week.
I absolutely could. These are great golf cigars.
Yep.
Because they've got a little bit of complexity to them, but not so much that you need to experience the cigar.
Right. You don't have to stop what you're doing and sit down to smoke a Medianoche. And I think this is a case of the cigar industry listening. You know, when somebody said, yeah, this is a good cigar, but it's not a $12 cigar. And they said, okay, let's reel back the price on these.
Yeah, so prices online are showing about $7.50, $7 a stick for a 5-pack. But you can probably get them right around that $8 mark in your brick and mortar.
Yep, so till next week, try the Romeo and Juliet Medianoche.
This episode of the Cigar Cast is brought to you by Vic Insurance. Vic Insurance is a second-generation independent insurance agent committed to serving Tennesseans for over 20 years. They represent a dozen of the most competitive carriers to guarantee you're getting the best possible coverage and rates available. Are you one of the thousands of Americans who doesn't realize that you don't have to wait until renewal to shop your insurance? Auto rates are at an all-time low right now, and it's never been a better time to save money anywhere we can. Let the team at Vic Insurance do the shopping for you so you can spend more time with your cigars and family. Well, not necessarily in that order. Give their team a call at 615-488-0731 today for your free, no-hassle quote or visit vicinsurancegroup.com.
Back to the Cigar Cast. This is one of your hosts, Shane, sitting across from the man that once spent a night in a German hotel under the name Hans Schwollenbecker, Mr. Trey Dedman.
This episode's going to be one that goes down in infamy at this point.
And I was hoping for some sort of a witty response on your part. I was hoping you had something to say about that. And all, but you apparently don't. And all, but... Anyway, speaking of traveling, coming back to the show. Well, first, how's the Africa treating you?
Oh, it's great as always.
The Rendage is okay. I mean, it's
that
okay
surprises
at best.
Me.
I know now why they've been sitting in the shop for so long.
Yeah.
And it's obvious that a couple of people smoked one and said, yeah, and just weren't impressed. I don't know. I would be interested if somebody smoked one of these and really loved it. Do me a favor, Facebook me and tell me what you liked about it.
I really liked it, but it's been so long I would have to smoke another one to tell you why.
This is how, folks, this is how you con yourself into a $22 cigar. I dare you to buy me that cigar. I'll tell you how to... How dare you say? You see, you should have started with a little bit more indignant stance there, Hans. No. And then you could have come at me and perhaps got a $20-something cigar out of the deal.
No, well, that was not my intent.
I'll make you a deal. You blindfold me and you put a Padron 50th in front of me in a Whore Dodge, and I'll be happy to tell you which is which. And then I'll smoke the 50th.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm not gonna play your games there. But I am gonna say something I very rarely say on the show.
Parents, cover your kids' ears.
Nope, Shane, you were right.
Oh wow,
these masks are a nuisance.
Of course.
From the AP in Chicago, Jacquez Scott was captured by the Cook County Sheriff's Department and the FBI on Saturday. After escaping from jail using a coronavirus protective mask as a disguise. So
he just put on the mask and walked right out the door.
So he switched sweatshirts with a guy who was due to be paroled, claiming that he would pay him for the, knowing that the guy would eventually get out anyway, and thinking by that point he would have escaped. So he switches sweatshirts, puts on the mask, which covered up a couple of distinctive face tattoos. The cops never caught
nothing,
on.
Nothing says winner like face tattoo.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But sure enough, they were eventually able to track him down. But you're right. The masks are a nuisance.
Well, it has never been a better time to rob a convenience store. You walk in, gloves, mask, hat, fully covered up, nobody bats an eye.
That's right.
And all you could just, and actually, you don't even need a gun. You could just look at the convenience store.
Just start coughing.
Hey, listen. I'm about to pull this mask down and sneeze on you if you don't empty the register. And them in the little goldfish bowl will empty the register. Do you ever wonder, and I always ask them, the people that are at the gas station now, do you ever wonder which side of the glass you're actually on? Is the glass here to keep you in? Do they feed you through the roof? Does the roof open up and flakes fall down ever so often into your little air? And then they all look at me like, will you buy your stuff and get out of here?
As well they should.
But anyway, the joys of traveling. Prime Minister Boris Johnson never travels without his luxury item. So this is from...
Can I just say, as long as we're going to talk about Boris Johnson, has there ever been a better time for politicians with bad hair?
Oh, no. No, bad hair, bad teeth. Great time for bad teeth, bad breath.
I don't get close enough to any of these people to notice that one.
And this, yeah, I mean.
Or are you just making the assumption because he's British?
Well, it's not unfair. It's not totally unfounded. And all, but yeah, and you know, it's like I've said since the get-go, if you happen to have a skeleton in your closet, about 2 weeks ago was the time to trot it out because nobody would ever notice. I mean, the Air Force admitted that they had seen UFOs. Nobody cared.
That's right. They're too busy watching Tiger King.
Yeah, too busy worried about the coronavirus. Have you spent 1 second watching Tiger King?
I watched all of it.
Okay.
I knew you were going to judge me harshly for that.
Why?
It's a train wreck. There is... All right, so you like documentaries just like I do. And with a documentary, there's usually a protagonist, an antagonist, and then sort of a redemption story in most cases. There's not in this. That's what makes it so, like, everyone is just...
Do you not feel like you're just watching disturbed, mentally damaged people laughing at them?
No, I'm not laughing. I'm sitting in shock and awe at how depraved, and it's frightening.
It's not. See, we need a different word. Because there's depravity usually indicates something fun. This is worse. This is not depravity. There's no fun.
You've got
in this
an unhealthy
depravity.
Relationship with depravity. If you
probably do have an unhealthy relationship with depravity, you have a healthy relationship with depravity?
This is murder, conspiracy, drugs, suicide, all wrapped up into some just completely unredeeming personalities centered around the capture and inhumane treatment of animals. I mean,
so why are you sponsoring this?
I'm not sponsoring it. I'm saying sure, it's horrible.
You're watching it. You're sponsoring it. No, if you had watched half of one episode and says, oh, this is horrible, and kicked it off, then you wouldn't be sponsoring it. By episode four, you're sponsoring it.
If you have ever driven by a tractor-trailer accident on the interstate, then you understand that the way the human mind works.
I don't even slow down. I just keep on trucking.
Yeah, but you're one of few people. I'm saying the whole of America, aside from Shane, slows down a bit.
We'll get back to that at some point on Shane Island. We'll talk about that.
All right. And talk about Boris Johnson.
You know, Boris Johnson, he's eager to get back to traveling, but when he travels, he always carries a cigar in his personal bag. And all. And not necessarily that he's going to smoke it, not that he's an avid smoker, but he just carries a cigar in there.
What I think is really funny about this article is that it was released Sunday, so May 10th. Apparently, he made this admission back in 2008. Why so soon?
Yeah, what's the hurry, fellas?
Do you have a deadline?
Really, I don't want to spend much time on old Boris here because I know nothing of Boris's politics. I know nothing of his policies, nor do I intend to invest any time in that. But this does bring me.
you would like more of it than you think.
Probably would. No, there's generally that way things go. But I got to thinking, you know, here in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be spending a week down on the riverbank, sitting back, relaxing with my family, enjoying some fishing and some hanging out time and all the good things in life. And I'm going to tell you, as soon as the cruise lines open back up, I'm back on the cruise boat. I'm not going to cower at home scared that I'll go out and catch coronavirus. And also, I'm going to be back to traveling pretty quick. And I got to thinking about what are the things I always carry when I travel? And all, what's the one inseparable item from you? Now, okay, let's take out phones. Because everybody carries a phone.
Anything that's ubiquitous day to day.
Right. Let's talk about something that you have to say, oh, I can't forget my...
So I've been traveling a little bit more than usual, just, you know, kind of back and forth. Not anything outrageous lately. But for me, when I travel, it's a little bit different because I've got a couple of phones. I've got my computer. So I always keep a separate case that stays in my duffel bag that just has a phone charger, a USB charger, my watch charger, like, and I've got an extra of everything. And this is one of those things, like, if you travel at all, you owe it to yourself. Spend the money to buy a separate, you know, phone charger, you know, toothbrush charger if you use one, you know, whatever you use on a regular basis that needs to be charged. And keep it separate so that you never use it when you're at home, so that you always know you're never going to leave it. You're never going to leave home and not have something with you that you need, and just keep it in your duffel bag, keep it separate and just ready to go.
I would have to hide this from my wife, because the first day she couldn't find hers, she would be straight into my duffel bag snatching that out to utilize it. I've had to threaten her life on numerous times because all my cables to plug everything in stays in the same place. And when I waltz into there to plug everything in at night and all of a sudden the cable that I use is gone, oh, I missed this cable, so I grabbed yours.
Yeah. So
what do you do? Do you keep it under lock and key? Do you electrify it?
So you can do a couple of things. You can keep it in a place that she's not privy to, or you can use a different color. So on Amazon, you can get, you know, lightning chargers for iPhones and iPads and stuff really cheap, and you can get them in all different colors. You can get them cable wound and
right.
Make them look distinct so that you don't use them in your house. The only time you use the yellow charging cables is in the travel case. So when you walk through the house and you see a yellow charging cable, you rip it out of the wall and say, listen, I told you. And you do that enough. After the divorce, you won't have to worry about it.
Yeah, after the divorce, it'll be... No.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I get accused of, and it may or may not be true, of hiding good cigars in my truck from my wife.
You've admitted that's true on this show.
It may or may not be true. I'm not going to say... I'm not going to come totally clean upon this subject and all, but there is certain things that if she knows it's there... then, oh, I ain't got but a minute. I'm going to go snatch it out of his to-go bag, and then next time I'm ready to go, it's to-gone.
Yeah.
And I get to, you know, Sheboygan and realize I don't have an Apple Watch charger. So I'm curious how you pull that off. That's an interesting choice, though. I'm definitely not criticizing your choice.
It has made, especially, you know, I've talked to other, like I wear contacts and glasses, and so you kind of have to gather that up. I do use an electric toothbrush. I just gave myself away, which you rolled your eyes at. And so, like, getting stuff together when I have to travel is a little bit of a production. I've got a special box that my hearing aids go in that keep them dry and sanitized overnight. And so that's the only thing that I just have one of right now that I actually have to pack up when I travel. Everything else, as soon as I'm ready, I'm gone. I'm out. And it just, it's kind of like always having gas in your car. You know, there right. are some people that will let it run out and then, oh, I've only got like, I'm way on empty, but that's all right. I'll get home and then I'll get, no, you get gas at night. That way, no matter what happens, you're always, so there are those people. And that, for me, it just, there's so much, it's so much easier, so much less stress in packing when you know that all of the little things that are easy to forget are already taken care of.
Well, when I travel, the one luxury item that I carry that I refuse to leave without, if I'm going to be gone for long enough that I'm going to need a shave, I am going to take my Golden Badger hair brush with me.
Mine broke yesterday.
Oh, you broke the badger?
Yeah. That sounds
like that cost extra in Amsterdam.
Yeah, I had to...
How did you break a badger butt?
Where the hosel is glued into the handle mm-hmm. came that glue. I've had this same brush for years, and I didn't spend as much on my brush as you did on yours. And so the glue had just gotten brittle enough over, you know, the last decade of use that it finally just came loose. All I have to do is re-glue it back in. But, yeah, that was a very sad day.
Oh, yeah, because once you get used to the process, because my shave process is a couple of steps. I put a little Cremo in my hand. I put a little of another kind of cream in my hand, a conditioner. I use the brush to stir it all and up and then lather up. But if I'm going to be gone long enough that I'm going to need a shave, I'm going to carry my Badger brush. I know, it's just, I guess that's a weird thing to want, but that's something I don't want to be at a hotel with a can of Colgate trying to lather up enough to use a safety razor to scrape off my chin.
Well, and see, we've talked about this in the shop before. I don't think we've ever talked about it on the show. When I'm on the road, I shave in the shower. So no soap, no nothing, just hot water directly, and I go to town. The brush and I actually use the soap in the jar, and that's a treat for me at home. So I don't really worry about that so much when I travel.
Well, so we look at Town and Country Mag. I looked at about five of these different articles today of stuff to carry. What the 25 travel accessories for men. And we're going to hit the high points on this. I don't think there's any need to go in depth to each of these. Okay, pocket notebooks. Never carry them. I've got a phone. I got a notes section in my phone.
There is nothing quite like putting notes on paper. I've recently... So I've always been a digital guy. I keep my calendar online. I keep, like, of any events I have, I notes on my phone. I've recently gone back to using a paper planner, and there's something about physically writing things down. Number one, the act of writing it down keeps you from forgetting it. And then there's just something really...
Well, that's why I write things down, so I don't forget them.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying but it helps in the memory process as well. I'm a big fan of... I always travel with a pen and paper. Always.
See, now I carry a nice pen. Always carry a nice pen. Sometimes I have to sign an autograph. Sometimes
especially right now, like if I go to get takeout from a restaurant or whatever, and they've all got the pen on a chain that everybody that's been coming in there is using, it's really nice to have your own pen that you know is clean.
Yeah. Well, and it's also nice to have a pen you know is going to work.
Exactly.
Windproof.
And spend extra on a pen.
Oh,
if
yeah.
there's spend one the, thing, spend money on a pen.
Bic Uniball all the way. I'm always going to...
I'm left-handed. I can't use those.
You can't use it. Why can't you use a Uniball if you're left-handed?
It smears too bad.
Well, I guess it'd be called a bi-ball if you could use it right. If you could use it ambidextrously.
It'd be an ambi-ball.
Ambi-ball. And a windproof umbrella. Okay. Are we not past the point in society where anybody carries a dadgum umbrella?
I keep one in my car at all times. Okay. At what point did you become waterproof, Shane?
I was born waterproof. I was born a mess. They hosed me off. At that point, I considered myself waterproof. I've been waterproof my whole life. One of my favorite things to do is to walk into the grocery store in the rain as if it's the sunniest, brightest day ever. I just stroll right in. Of course, now 85% of the time I'm wearing a hat.
Those of us who... I'm not going to... That's going to make it way too easy on you. No, I still carry an umbrella.
Old, okay. Old fashioned kit for that power alcoholic who only wants... Okay, there's not a scenario. So I understand how guys buy this. They think, boy, wouldn't that be cool if we're all sitting around the bar lighting a cigar and I order a Woodford and I whip out my old fashioned kit and mix it up? It's not cool.
It's not cool. It is not.
No, let me be the first to tell you, buddy. It's not cool. Just go ahead and give it up. If you must carry your own cocktail, I will agree with a good backpack.
Spend money on a backpack.
Yeah, good backpack's worth the money, and I'll be sure it fits all of the airline guidelines and all that stuff, but it's...
And if you get one, we were in an airport recently, I think it was Boston, Logan, and they've got this new automated tray system that, like, pulls the trays out, and I hated it, because what it means is that my backpack, as well as Noelle's, we both carry TSA-compliant backpacks. You unzip it, you lay it flat, you don't have to take your computer out of it. It's brilliant. But I really hope the trend is not to move to these automated basket things. Even the TSA guy, which we all know they have no sense of humor, no personality whatsoever, even they were like, yeah, I hate these things. I hate when I have to work this gate, because apparently it was the only one with it. But get a TSA-compliant backpack and get one that fits. This is something that a lot of people don't think about. Get a backpack that fits.
Sure. And I carry a backpack, and a lot of times when we're traveling, we're on the boat. When we get off the boat, I get off the boat with an empty backpack. Mm-hmm. And then the dogs always have to sniff it to be sure I'm not trying to smuggle fruit into another country. But I carry it empty, because then if you do buy something, you just throw it in the backpack.
Yeah.
It's so easy. It's so convenient. It's just the best thing ever. Okay. Here's the deal. I'm going to cover about six of these in one swipe here. Noise-canceling headphones, iPods, Bluetooth, Apple Pods, earbuds, whatever. As long as you stick it in your head hole and I don't have to hear the music, I could care less.
Well, but I think this is for the more discerning. The thing is, I believe I have had really cheap headphones. I've had really expensive headphones. And honestly, I don't really notice that much of a difference.
No, at a certain point, you're just putting on the headphones. And I don't mind being... I don't need noise-canceling headphones. I don't need to feel like I have flown to the Symphony Opera House when I'm flying to the Sydney Opera House. I don't need to feel like I'm there. I'm okay with a little background noise. Maybe, you know, hey, he's got a gun, the plane's on fire. Those are things I'd like to hear.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily want my Bose canceling out the order to abandon ship. So, that's a portable charger.
Absolutely. I never leave home without one. I actually have two. I've got one that's got a built-in QI charger, which is the one where you don't have to have the cable. That thing's brilliant. I never leave the house without it. I charge it every time I use it once I'm done so that I know it's always good to go.
I don't believe in them.
Of course you don't.
Well, I charge my junk before I get on the boat, before I get on the plane. When I'm getting ready to go home, I have my junk charged up.
Yeah, but you also don't know when a flight's going to get canceled and you're going to be marooned at the airport and everybody that got there before you has already taken all the plugs. It's nice to know that if you need to use your phone more than usual and drain the battery, that you've got backup.
Heaven forbid I have to spend 30 minutes waiting on a plane without Candy Crush to keep me comfortable.
I said canceled. I'm talking about making new reservations and trying to figure things out.
Fringed cashmere scarf. This is only for if you need to choke the guy in front of you to death for snoring with his seat leaned back too far.
Well, this is kind of, this goes into a, so you don't wear a scarf hardly at all that I've ever noticed.
You've never seen me with a scarf on.
I didn't think I had, but I wasn't sure. I do from time to time. It's really, if you're going somewhere in extremely cold climates, it's really hard to beat and it takes up zero room. So I understand what they're saying. The only real issue I have with this list, kind of as a general rule, is that they're talking about a $235 scarf, $98 cashmere gloves, a $70 luggage tag that's leather, $450 duffel bag. Look, there are a lot of things in life that you shouldn't skimp on, and you should pay a little more for. A backpack is one. You don't
good
need
underwear.
Good underwear. And anything that separates you from the ground.
Sure.
Shoes, mattress. But you don't have to. This is the great thing about travel gear is that you can get some really great. I've got my duffel bag that I use all the time is one that unzips completely and becomes a garment bag. So I can put my suit, my kilt, whatever needs to lay flat, and it goes in the bottom, and then the sides fold up as the sides of the duffel bag. It was like $50. And it's the best piece of luggage I've ever had.
Okay, and I do take JBL Extreme 2 waterproof portable Bluetooth speaker. This is never, ever carry one of these traveling, because all you're going to try to do is expose someone else to your musical tastes.
So I had that same thought when I read this. My only caveat would be if you're going to the beach. Now, if you need music on the beach, you have completely misinterpreted the purpose of the beach.
Right. If you need music on the beach, stay home, fill up the kiddie pool, then buy a bag of sand at Lowe's. Yeah.
But that being said, I do know there are plenty of people that do enjoy having music on the beach, and you can get away with a speaker as long as you don't turn it up so loud. But that would be the only caveat. But yeah, you shouldn't be traveling with a Bluetooth speaker, just as a general rule. The next one are these packing cube sets. These things are brilliant. I actually have a set. They're little mesh bags that go in your, and it just kind of helps keep your socks and underwear separate, because there's nothing worse than trying to dig through, especially if it's a.
How big a problem is your underwear and your socks mixing?
No, if you're, because I always travel in a duffel bag. Always travel in a duffel bag.
You're only wearing one sock and no underwear.
It was the gremlins and the luggage hold. No. So if most of the time that I go on a trip, it's a multi-leg trip. We'll do some here, some there, and we'll stay a couple of different places throughout the trip. And so it's really nice to know that everything just kind of has a place that's easy to reach, because I'm not unpacking my bag. Like, when you get on the cruise boat, I'm guessing you probably unpack the bag into the closet, because you're going to be there a week or 5 days or whatever.
Right.
I typically don't travel that way, so it's really nice to have everything in its place and a place for everything.
And, hey, MacGyver, you don't need an Archer flashlight.
No.
You don't need to carry a flashlight when you're traveling. Assume that wherever you're going has got electricity under control.
And you don't need a digital luggage scale either.
No.
Weigh it before you leave. Know how much room you have to play with on the way back. If you really think you're going to be buying a lot of souvenirs and stuff, put an empty bag in your luggage so that you have another one for the trip back. And every hotel room that I've ever been in either has a bathroom scale, or you can borrow one from the front desk or go down to the fitness center. Just stand on it with your bag and then stand on it without and do the math to figure out how much your luggage weighs.
Now, I will agree with them. The multi-port USB wall charger is valuable. I carry a 6-port when we go on the cruise. And all I've got a 6-port charger. Because in the cruise cabin, there's only one working plug.
Right.
Because they don't want you to burn the ship down. Well, I fix them. I plug the 6-pronger in there so that I can charge my iPad, my iPhone, my watch, everything at the same time.
I keep one of those in my duffel bag as well. It's got 4 USB ports and 2 outlets. It's like a little mini, it's not even a surge protector, but it's just, I love that thing, especially because I mentioned I've got way too much stuff I have to charge.
In the subject of useless travel blanket,
yeah.
Hey, if you can't make it across the country without your blankie, you probably ought to stay home. First and foremost, a tiny travel blanket like that, how much use can it be? And second, how can you not make it without a blanket for that length of time?
Yeah.
I know. I'm just telling you.
One thing that's on the list that I really do like is compression socks for air travel.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are, especially if you're flying transcontinental, it's a really, really good way to keep you from feeling tired, believe it or not. Anytime I fly over 4 hours, I make sure that I get up at least once during the flight and either walk the cabin, go to the bathroom, even if I don't have to go, just to kind of. And the compression socks really help kind of keeping you from getting that heavy, fatigued feeling when you get off the plane.
And thanks to your little pack, you don't get them mixed up with your compression underwear.
Exactly.
I know. So anyway, just a little fantasy about traveling in the days when we're going to come back to traveling soon. Those days are coming back sooner rather than later. So it's going to be I think there'll be a lot of momentum gained with that. It'll be slow at first, but there'll be a lot of momentum.
One last thing about this list, just because I think this is something that you and I are going to agree on. It says the last thing on the list is the Kindle Paperwhite e-reader. I get a feeling you're much like me. It's paper books or nothing.
I don't own a single paper book. I'm all electronic, baby.
Oh, man. This is the same thing with you not liking the notebook. I would have really thought that you were the kind of guy that likes the nostalgia of using a real book.
I like the control. I like that I can control how bright it is, that I can control what size the text is, that I can control...
That you can read 50 Shades of Grey without people knowing.
That's right. That nobody can know when I'm on move 76 of the Kama Sutra sitting next to them. They can't see from my screen. And I like the control that when the ebook come out, I gave away all my books.
Really?
I packed them all up. I think I've got 4 books in my house, and one of them's Jay's pirate book, which I also bought on Kindle. I just bought a paper copy.
It's also a signed copy, so.
Yeah. But no, all electronic reading for me, buddy.
That is so one of the things that my absolute must for any type of air travel. With like, if we were to boil this whole thing down to one absolute, I always buy a paper. When I get to the airport, I always buy a physical newspaper. It's great because when you're in taxi and takeoff, you can still have it out reading, working on. I always get the New York Times. I do the crossword. I am absolutely a sucker for print.
See, I'm right the opposite. It's probably been 10 years since I've cracked a paper. I mean, what am I, a caveman? I've got a box here on the table that'll tell me everything I need to know. Why in the world do I need to?
But up until recently, they made you turn it off during taxi and takeoff.
Again, I can survive 20, 30 minutes without being entertained. I can sit back and have a depraved fantasy and be just fine for the 20 or 30 minutes, which when I get on an airplane, it must be the change in pressure, but I fall asleep every takeoff. I've never been awake through a takeoff.
Really?
Soon as they hit the little accelerator and it pushes me back into the chair, out like a light.
That's wild. I cannot sleep on a plane.
I've never been awake during a takeoff and rarely during a landing.
I flew to London two summers ago, and yeah, it's a 7-hour flight, and it was overnight, and I think I slept an hour of it. I was dog tired, but I cannot sleep on an airplane.
So it was a 12-hour flight back from Alaska, slept the whole way, it was all night, went in there, sacked out. And I'll never had a lick of trouble, but it just depends on what kind of traveler you are. But no, I'm past the stage of evolution where print media holds value to me. And I
would have thought for sure that you were a real book person, but
I've evolved.
Fair enough. Well, anyway, so that's about it for the show this week. You can reach us on facebook.com/thecigarcast. We're on Instagram and Twitter @thecigarcast. And you can reach us by email at info@thecigarcast.com.
The word Dodge is about a 4.5.
All right.
It's sad that last week I ranked a Gurkha higher than I'm ranking this Ordage.
It is sad.
It's about a 4.5. It's not been impressive. It's not given me anything. It's been a one-note chord. It's just kind of been blah.
Yeah. Well, the Africa's still a 7. Still love this cigar.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I'd smoked an Africa. I may go in there and get one and have one afterwards.
There we go.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening this week. Until next week, have a great cigar and think well of us.